Just before I start, I was thinking, these gatherings always lead me to think about my own experience. And I was thinking last night, okay, I've thought about why didn't I become a computer scientist and become a social scientist and what led, you know, my career decisions as a young woman. And last night I was like, so why didn't I become an entrepreneur? Because, you know, I'm almost 40 and discovering that I'm much more entrepreneurial than I thought I ever would be. And yesterday's work about engaging women and kind of degenderizing the notion of entrepreneurship really sparked a light bulb in that I remember being in a class, we had economics in high school. I was sitting in a class where they did a self-assessment tool, a survey tool, to see if we had the potential to be, didn't say entrepreneurs, but business owners. And I remember I was about 13 or 14, and all the questions had to do with, would you be willing to fire someone even though their family was starving? And then, of course, at the end, it said, you would be a terrible business owner. Which, again, not even though we heard from the women entrepreneurs yesterday, that at some point you do need to learn to fire people if you need to, right? And you do need to focus on balances. But it was such an inaccurate and aggressive and soulless representation of what entrepreneurship was. And I was a teenager, and I took these results to heart. And I kept, okay, I would be a terrible business owner. Here we go. Let's move on. So, again, very important to introduce young girls to this notion of what entrepreneurship is and how much impact they can have through it, and not making it such a gendered perspective on what you need to be an entrepreneur. So today I'm going to talk about our research, which really focuses on technical women in industry in high-tech companies. So it's more, we talked a lot about biotech yesterday. We're going to talk about high-tech IT companies. But our report is available for free online. And so what I did for this presentation is I picked the findings that I hope can inform this dialogue on how can we encourage women to transition into entrepreneurship. So throughout my talk, I'll try to answer, well, what can we learn from these data that can inform women moving into entrepreneurship? So this research we published in 2008. And it was done in partnership with the Clayman Institute for Gender Research at Stanford University, and Candy was actually one of the research associates on this study, so she's intimately familiar with this data set. And what we did is we collected about 800 survey responses from 7 Silicon Valley high-tech companies, and we surveyed their entire technical ladder. So we asked companies to identify who are your core technical employees, and we're going to survey them. So we surveyed both men and women across the span of the careers in those companies. And because, as we saw yesterday in some of the statistics, we know that technical women represent less than 4%. There is less than 4% of women in technical leadership positions. Our research question really was, what happens at the mid-level of the career so that they're not moving into those higher-level positions? What are the barriers they're encountering? And then, more importantly, what can be done? What can we tell companies to do as far as interventions? And so I hope today to provide you with a portrait of who these technical women are and think about how we could inform a career transition into entrepreneurship and what would the barriers look like then. So we talked about the scissors graph yesterday. So what we found is that in a typical high-tech company in Silicon Valley, you have about an 80-20 split of technical men versus women. So you have 20% technical women, 80% men. But the women are not all located equally distributed across the career progression ladder. So we found that men were three times more likely to be in a high-level position than women were, and women were significantly more likely to be in an entry-level position. So again, the scissors graph that we talked about yesterday was alive and well in these companies. And we actually define entry-level, mid-level, and high-level with the companies themselves, and we looked at all the positions and split them. What we found also is that, and this has implication for the kind of women entrepreneurs we may see in high tech, it's a very, very diverse workforce. And in fact, technical women were more diverse than technical men. So technical women were less likely to be white than technical men in those companies. And yes, this is a Silicon Valley, partly a Silicon Valley phenomenon, but I do think that it informs the kind of global workforce that we're going to see more and more in those high-tech companies. So we talked about when women and men are likely to start a company. Well, the median age there, the mean age was 42 years of age for men, 40-year-old for women, about 15 years since degree, so there's experience there. They're potentially ready to start companies. And they have a little fewer years of technical expertise, which I will explain why that is in a minute. But they've been an average of 8 years in these companies and an average of 4 years in these positions, okay? But there is significant experience and human capital in those women and men. We found no difference in the highest degree attained. And so if degree attainment was a barrier on the technical track, this is not something where women come in at a disadvantage. We found the same rates of PhDs, master's degrees, bachelor's degrees for men and women. There were no significant difference there. Where we did find a difference was in the field of degree, so that, which is not surprising. We talked about multidisciplinary approaches to technology and biotechnology yesterday. So you can see that the women, the majority of the women, are from a technical degree, computer science or engineering, in those technical positions. But they're still more likely... Can you see the non-technical person here? Oh, yeah, thanks. But they're still more likely than the men to have come from an other field. And when we looked at what those other fields were, we had about half of those other fields were other STEM fields, like mathematics, biology, and also some social science and business fields. So... what does it take to be successful in technology in the minds of technical men and women? And then what can we see about how these technical men and women perceive themselves on these attributes? This is an important distinction to see if they're likely to be successful or go into entrepreneurship or intrapreneurship. So first we asked them what their work values were, and we were trying to assess some traditional work values associated with technical employees. And you can see that there's basically women are slightly more likely to say that they like teamwork, but not a very significant difference. But you can see the values are teamwork, opportunities to continuously update technical skills, innovative work, even though men scored higher on that, and I'll explain a little bit about that in a minute. Being seen as an expert and needing to understand how the work contributes to the team or the organization. So overall, they all very strongly identify with these work values. When we asked them what are the skills that are very or extremely important to be successful in technology, most technical workers said you need to be analytical, innovator, questioning, risk-taking, collaborative, entrepreneurial, and assertive, which I personally found very interesting that assertive made it to the top list of the skills of the attributes of successful people in technology. And that does remind us that a certain communication style is favored in the technical culture. Not so much high are the stereotypical behaviors of being geeky and isolated at the keyboard. Although this is no surprise for those of you who work in industry, this is important because when you talk to a 14-year-old girl about what is being a technologist, they often have the image of Dilbert in their mind. And so this is an important distinction. So how do women and men then rate their own abilities on those skills, right? Because people are unlikely to perceive that they can advance if they don't think that they have those attributes of success. So you can see on the left is what people said were true of successful people in technology. And then what did women and men say were true of themselves? So do they possess those attributes that they say are important in their own self-perception? So women and men perceive themselves as equally analytical, risk-taking. There was no significant difference there, and I want to point that out because I did see one of the papers we had had to do with risk-taking behavior and testosterone and something like that, and that they had found a significant difference. Not here. Women are perceiving themselves as risk-taking as men. So that does bode well for maybe their self-perception in being ready to become an entrepreneur. And women also perceive themselves as assertive, or as likely to perceive themselves as assertive as the technical men, which partly, even though we had a lot of qualitative comments about just how assertive and sometimes aggressive the culture can be for these women, that they really have learned to communicate in that way, even if they didn't necessarily come in, especially from various cultural backgrounds, that they really have learned to communicate and be heard in that way of being assertive. Where we do see a difference in the self-perception of the success attributes for technical men and women, and where I do see a strong need for intervention, is that women were significantly less likely to perceive themselves as innovator and significantly less likely to perceive themselves as entrepreneurial. So again, when does it happen that in our careers as women, we start getting the idea that we're not as entrepreneurial somehow, right? And that's a huge part of the gendered assumptions behind entrepreneurship and the socialization process that happens. So that this self-perception of, oh, I could even think that I am entrepreneurial or think of becoming an entrepreneur is not happening. And you can see that women were significantly more likely than men to perceive themselves as being collaborative. Where we also found a significant discrepancy, and I think it really talks to some of the barriers that we could see for women in entrepreneurship, is that women are significantly more likely than men to perceive that you have to work extremely long hours to be successful in technology. And then they also say that they do not think that they're working as many hours as is necessary to be successful, to meet that ideal of success. And you see that for the men, it's actually pretty equal, right? 40% say you need to work long hours to be successful in technology, and about 40% say, oh yeah, I have that attribute, right? So it's kind of an equal perception. For women, there's this huge gap. And this comes from the family configurations of technical women. And it's not that the women are working less hard or things like that. It's that they are perceiving a certain ideal of what it takes to be successful and how their family configurations is incompatible with that ideal. And I'll go into the family configurations in a minute. Oops, sorry. I thought I'd gotten rid of that silly animation. We also asked technical men and women to rate the competence of their managers and supervisors. And we found that even if whether they had a woman manager or a man manager, there was no difference in their ranking of their manager on, like, my manager is a good leader, my manager gives me feedback, my manager, right? There was no difference whether they had a man manager or a woman manager. Where we did find a difference that I think is really disturbing is that both technical men and women rated, if they had a female manager, they rated her technical competence lower than if they had a male manager. So what that tells us is that Laurel talked about even women have the unconscious biases that hurt women, right? Women and men hold these biases. And in these companies, The ticket to success is technical credibility. This is the currency. And now we're seeing that the technical employees themselves are giving women a lower perception on technical competence. So this is a key point of intervention as well to advance women in high-tech entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship. We need to degenderize those perceptions that women are somehow less technical than men. And Sears, this is some of the comments we heard throughout the interviews. You know, I noticed that women in technical positions are not taken very seriously. I've had experiences where I've worked with guys and it was hard for them to take me seriously as a technical person until I proved myself, right? And it goes back to, we talked about yesterday, how much harder a woman scientist has to work to be considered half as credible. So what the image that emerges is that there's a discrepancy between women's self-perceptions and what they believe is necessary to be successful in high tech in terms of long working hours, being entrepreneurial, and being an innovator. And now I want to go into the family configurations of technical women, because if we're going to have any intervention to help them become entrepreneurs, this family demographics need to be taken into consideration. By the time technical women in these companies have reached the mid-level, most of them have children, okay? So they're still delaying having children, and some are foregoing having children in greater rates than men because they know there's a significant cost to their career. But still, you see an overwhelming majority by the mid-level is starting to have children, and at the high level, this difference between men and women has disappeared. Where we see a significant difference between technical men and women is in their family configurations that has real consequences for the ability of women to advance, and especially the expectations of the career ladder around what kind of availability technical men and women need to have to advance. So 80% of the technical women we surveyed have a partner who works full-time. Only 38% of the technical men we surveyed have a partner who works full-time. This is a little bit like the 1950s, because in the U.S. right now, only 19% of marriages are still based on the traditional model of women at home, men working. And yet, in this industry, you have a very gendered family configuration. So what you see then, we ask them, who has the primary responsibility for the household? You, your partner, or it's equal? And you can see that more than half the men say, oh yeah, my partner has primary responsibility for the household. Only 13% of the technical women could say as much. So there's a very unequal distribution of family responsibilities. And so when you imagine you're at the mid-level, you're a technical woman, and you're thinking, okay, I could aspire to become a VP, a fellow, or I could start my own business. Then they start thinking, oh, but wait a minute. This implies 24/7 round-the-clock availability, and I don't have that kind of support structure to make that happen. Meanwhile, the technical men at the mid-level are recreating this structure where, you know, the rewards go to the person who can be available 24/7 and attend the 7 p.m. meeting and this kind of. So there is an implicit assumption in the reward structures at these companies often that in order to advance, you will have somebody at home to take primary responsibility for the children and the household. And this is true of all levels that we studied, right? Even at the entry level, you see the men, 45% say their partner has the primary responsibility, and then 50% at the mid and the high level. So this is true throughout the pipeline. We'll do some follow-up analysis to look at generations, because we've heard a lot about the millennials coming in with very different assumptions about having equal partnerships and dual career families, and we've heard in our interviews from young technical men who actually said, who were some of the biggest proponents for some of the reform around flexibility and acknowledging the needs of families. And so when we do the follow-up analysis, we'll see if that pans out. So not only are women in dual career couples in those technical careers, they're in dual technical careers. So this is a phenomenon that had been documented for academia, where women scientists tend to be partnered with men scientists, and now we have this for industry. We see this pattern very clearly for industry, that women, technical women tend to partner with technical partners. But what that tells you is that not only now they're supporting a dual career family situation, it's a dual high-tech career family situation. So you can imagine the amount of juggling that goes on for these technical women. And we heard countless interview stories about, you know, well, I'm up at 5 because I have a call with the India team, and then my partner has another call, and then we fight it out to see who's going to take care of the child and who's going to bring our son to school, and we argue about which meeting has less meaning, basically, who's going to get to miss their meeting. And unfortunately, because of the gendered assumption of society, it's often the woman's meeting that will give. So it's an important thing, too. So given all that, we asked those technical employees, what are your plans for the next 12 months? And most all of them said they wanted to upgrade their technical skills. We had about a third of both men and women looking for new opportunities within and outside their companies. And, you know, some will say, well, this was pre-economic downturn. You know, yeah, I'm sure they've stopped looking outside right now. But look at Start My Own Company. Look at how small these proportions are. We only have 2.5% of the women that are even thinking about starting their own company. And 6% of the men, not very high either, but still a significant difference. So when I was at the airport on the way down, I decided to investigate this variable, Start My Own Company, a little more for the purpose of this workshop. So I looked at the distribution of the answer in this question. How likely are you, you know, what are the plans for the next 12 months, and does that include starting your own company? And as you can see, women, there's like 61% of women who are definitely not. It's not even vaguely on the radar, right? Significant difference there between the men and the women who said definitely not. But then what's interesting to me is you have like 9% who say maybe, so, you know, is there a way to get to these undecided, if you will, to nudge them, to show them the opportunities? When you have, you know, then, of course, when you look at probably or definitely will, it's very low, but there's still about close to 10% of maybes, and maybe these are the women we need to show the opportunities to, because they don't know, you know, what can be done. So and what is available to them in terms of entrepreneurship, but they may consider it if they were provided with those kinds of opportunities. And then I did some analysis on their self-perception on these different attributes and how likely they were to answer that they would start their own company in the next year. So this is not in the report either. That was me at the airport exploring this. And men and women who ranked themselves higher on the attributes were more likely to intend starting a company, long working hours. So those who perceive themselves as working longer hours were more likely to say that they would start a company. Being innovator and being entrepreneurial. And remember, those are the exact attributes that women rank themselves lower than men on. Okay, so there's a point of intervention right there to bring them, to provide them with mentoring and information and bring their own self-perception of their capacity to innovate, to overcome the work-life challenges, and to be entrepreneurial and bring that up. By contrast, I looked at the self-perceptions associated with intentions to look for another job, a new opportunity within the company, which we could argue maybe has something to do with intrapreneurship intentions, although it's a, you know, proxy. And that was long working hours, again, so this one doesn't go away. So the dual career family challenges is not going away, whether you're looking for an opportunity to move up inside the company or you want to start a company. A perception of being a good manager was associated with that one, and being questioning. So I would say in conclusion that there's significant experienced technical women in industry. They have very similar work values to their male counterparts. They're looking to work on innovative projects. And they do not differ in their self-perceptions on multiple dimensions, including risk-taking. But this transfer to entrepreneurship isn't occurring. Technical women's self-perception on the skills necessary to success in high-tech differs from men's on innovation, entrepreneurship, and working long hours, and these are the very attributes tied in our sample to the intention to start a company. So this needs to be addressed. The interventions need to provide the adequate support for dual career family configurations of technical women, and a focus in increasing the self and others' perceptions on entrepreneurship, innovation, and technical competence, because gendered perceptions still prevail there. And now I'm going to pass it along to Candy, who has a lot more to say on the gendered perceptions of entrepreneurship. So thank you.